call to order the House Committee on Business and Labor for March 20, or for Education, thank you. I'm just used to that. We can do business and labor too, but for March 25th, 2015. Okay, we've got a couple of bills to hear today and one to work, but before we start, I would like to welcome the pages from the Senate. I want to wait. And the pages from the House.
Yay!
It's nice that you guys are spending your spring break here in the Capitol. I like that.
It's very good.
And you can go home and have, I'll give you an assignment if you want to do it tonight, a history assignment, okay?
Madam Chair, because the pages from the Senate are over listening to a House committee,
yes.
Is that due in part because we're working more and harder?
Yes. Yes. That's what we say. So anyway, but welcome. Welcome. And when you are finished with what you have to do, feel free to quietly leave. Okay. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2967.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2967 directs school districts to prepare and file annual reports related to students enrolled in English as a second language programs. It directs the Department of Education to report to the Legislative Assembly on the data collected. The committee has been asked to consider the dash ones, and the representative is here to talk about that.
Well, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the public hearing on 2967 and open up a public hearing on 2967 concurrently with House Bill 2968. Okay, so if you want to read 2968.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2968 directs the school district to prepare and file annual reports related to students enrolled as now I have English as a second language program, but that's not correct. English as students with a poverty designation, and directs the Department of Education to report to the Legislative Assembly on the data collected.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wisnett, welcome.
It's only really that much. The book's my backup. Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable colleagues, committee members. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53. And I really do appreciate the chair and you listening to these two bills today. The actual bills it's the same report I'm asking for, and I want to go through. The chair doesn't believe I really did this, but this is what we're going to talk about, House Bill 2967-1 and House Bill 2968-1. Madam Chair, you know this. There's $593 million from the state school fund that's allocated for ELL students and students from poverty families. I hit the wrong button. I'll just hit this one. That one's sideways. Let me do that. There we go. Yeah. These are the main sponsors of the bill. Did I misspell Sherry too? I did.
Okay. Spring. Thank you.
I did the presentation myself, Madam Chair. I'll take responsibility.
Duly noted.
It is a bipartisan bill. And I could talk all day. We all know, this committee knows that the ELL population is growing, and also we know in the state that families in poverty are increasing. And I think some of your teachers on this committee, again, and you know this very well, that basically each school year there's $6,000 designated per student. If the student has English as a second language, the ELL is English language learning, and English second language is sort of used both, but $3,000 additional dollars. And if you come from a family of poverty, you get an additional $1,500. And you could, a student that came from a poverty family and was English as a second language would be $10,500. What I did is took data that ODEA gave me for the populations for 2013-2014, multiplied those by the amount of money, and you come up with almost $300 million per school year and almost $600 million per budget that comes out of the state school fund. And the PowerPoint is because we have a lot of numbers. I wanted to. So what does these two bills do? Or what's the situation now, excuse me, for transparency and accountability? ODE does require school districts to report ELL expenditures, and I have a copy of that report. But that report only says how much you got and how much you spent. It doesn't say what they were spent on, what the money was spent on, and it doesn't tell you what the outcomes are. Now, overall, school districts do a report on graduation rates and all that, but that's not looking homing in on this specific need. And sorry that there is no reporting on how the money that's designated for poverty, students in poverty, there's no reporting. There was, during the interim, there was a task force, Representative Springer, that I apologize again for her misspelling. That was a typo, we can say that. But there was a task force on the school state funding, and they looked hard at ELL. But then they did state from the report, which you have on OLIS, that ODE worked with school districts to assure ESL, ELL expenditure data is reported correctly. That's what they said they need. ODE needs to do that. But they said any changes to the formula, and I'm not proposing any changes to the formula with these two bills, must be fully researched and based upon best practices, and I would say also based upon accountability from what the data has been that these two bills would provide. So what do these two bills do? Simple. They seek transparency and accountability of the almost $300 million allocated. Require school districts to submit an annual report, and that report would be developed by the school districts and ODE, according to -1. And then ODE would develop the report and brief the legislature on the report data. Pretty simple. In my research, and I've been working on this for almost a year, I have visited I've visited classes, ELL classes. I've talked to superintendents. I've talked to teachers. I've talked to ODE. I've talked to the governor's office, to the speaker's office, and a lot of people that are concerned about this issue, parents and families. But I went out to ESL and asked what are other states doing, and you have this data on OLIS too. It's a report from the ECS's Education Commission of the States. I've served as a commissioner on the ESL from Oregon before, and they do some good data. And you can see the information here. I draw your attention to the fact that, and I think it was an article we're going to see in a minute, we're the second highest as far as funding ELL. Because those three states, I think, are the same, so we're, you know, second most. And look at Washington State, only provides $930 per EL student. And as we showed you, we dedicate $3,000. Okay, be sure. That didn't advance, did it? There we go. Okay, also in my research, and I've worked really a lot of hours with Jan McComb. I appreciate her for providing me data and working with me to bring these two bills forward. As the chair knows, there's a Title I, Title III report. This is money that actually is No Child Left Behind, I think, Madam Chair. And this is federal money. In addition to, this is not part of the $600 million we've talked about. This is additional money that comes in that's also used for ELL and poverty. And the data that ODE provided me, that we get $140 million in 15-16 and $7 million for Title III in 14-15. But I wanted to do it, but there's a detailed manual that that requires this reporting. And you have that in, you can go to the Ben Lapine report and see all the things you're required to do for this little bit of money. And we're talking much more about the money that's coming out of the state school fund. I meant to tell you, anyone that has questions is the slides, Madam Chair, if it's okay, they can ask me as we go through the slides.
Okay.
If there's any question where I got it or what's... Okay. where are we? I think we could all agree that all parents, not just non-ESL, but all parents want smaller class size, but the ones that do not have English as a second language students, they believe that more effective use of the ELL funding would help bring down class size. And ESL parents, or ELL parents, want their students to learn quicker and know how the ELL funds are spent. You have the copy in OLIS of the Oregonian article about Oregon needs ELL reform, and how the parents in there talked about, I'll quote for you from that article, only 49% of EL students graduate, and nearly 23% have been in ELL programs for 5 years or longer. We can't say it's because of lack of resources, as Oregon allocates the second highest dollar amount in the U.S. per EL students. That's from that article. Thinking outside the box, I just threw this in there for this committee to think about. With $50 million, we could have a nurse in every K-6 school in Oregon. And that helps children from poverty to have the medical care to be sure they're healthy and can learn in the classroom. Okay. So, Madam Chair, I thank you and the Honorable Committee for listening to these bills. As you may or might not know, I'm sure you know, that there's other bills addressing ELL. I actually signed on to Representative Gallegos and Senator Hass's EL bills. Representative Gallegos' bill 2967, or excuse me, has the reporting requirement that I have here, mm-hmm, in 2967. He added that to, the wording is the same as what we have here. And it addresses the time limit on being an ELL student. And I actually had a bill addressing that issue too, but I decided to drop it and let Representative Gallegos proceed with his bill on that part.
Because we are hearing that in, I think, about another week or so.
Yeah. I would still ask the chair and the committee to consider. I think that there's some, not everyone agrees with the limitation. It's taken longer to come up with how that bill is going to read. But these two bills, I think, separately could benefit this body, benefit students, parents of both ELL and non-EL students, and let the time limit continue discussion on that. And I think people understand that. I hope you'll get some testimony on that today. I've also provided via OLIS the ESC, Education Commission of the States, report on how other states are reporting, what they're requiring. And it appears that Wisconsin and North Dakota require expenditure and performance. Illinois and Michigan require expenditure, and Washington, Arizona, and Colorado require performance reporting. So, Madam Chair, I want to be sure that you know this is not helping the problem. It's helping us get to the solving problems or making it more efficient, but we have to know what is being spent and how it's being spent to see if it's being done efficiently. This is strictly a transparency bill. There is some policy involved in the limitation. My bill that I drafted followed Mr. Saxton's recommendations, but everyone doesn't agree with that. There was some work that needed to be done on that Representative Gallegos is working on. So I'd love questions. Again, simple bill, transparency, a lot of money. Let's figure out how we're spending it and what are the outcomes.
Okay, thank you. Your questions. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I am curious about, having spent some time in the Portland schools with, I think, 81 different languages, and students arriving at all levels of literacy in their languages or lack of literacy in their languages, whether there's a way of trying to track, frankly, the range of issues that the ELL students arrive with. It's not just one group of folks coming in from one country having one language. It's, as I said, it was 81 different languages in the Portland. Some schools with 40 languages there, and the kids with various knowledge of their own, the written language that they were coming from, or their, just the vocabulary was often very small, even in their own language. My point is, how do we track that incredible variety with this?
Madam Chair, Representative, I agree completely with you. All the different languages that are in Oregon, especially in the Portland area, but that would be worked out by ODE and the school districts on, you know, how you can track that. This is just looking at the money and what the programs, you know, we're spending our money on. We do have, as you know, I've got the data in here, what each school district gets, and, you know, it goes from, you know, $60,000 to millions of dollars, and it's got also different populations, different languages to do. I'm also thinking outside the box. I've been trying to see about introducing ELL in Head Start, how much that would cost and how we could do that. We know that children can start learning a foreign language at 3 years old. I learned that from Harvard. I went to a conference in Harvard, and we were told that, yeah, they can begin learning a foreign language at 3 years old. So why not start our EL program in Head Start so those kids come to the PK ready to speak better English? And this is a complicated thing. I mean, I've spent a year looking at this, and you have, as the good representative says, you have children coming in all kind of different languages, proficiencies, and some that we don't even have, you know, the dialects from some of the Mexican countries or Indian dialects that I know that I'm real aware of that. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. But we're spending a lot of money, and all these bills are trying to do is say, are we spending it the right way, and can we analyze that?
Thank you. Representative Reardon.
Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention and working on it. I really appreciate it. I have friends that are ELL teachers, and they have expressed some skepticism, shall we say, about whether money that was directed toward ELL programs has actually reached their classrooms. So I wanted to thank you for doing that. But I would want to suggest that's what we're looking at in this bill, right, is just tracking the funding. To what level would you just see it as FTEs assigned to ELL teaching assignments, or are you trying to get down to how many, you know, pencils and supplies and things are used, or just?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. There's like five different ways. Like, I talked to a good friend of mine who's a retired principal who's doing a dual immersion, and that's the most expensive. But that's really the best for the child, because the child gets their math and science and tough courses in their native language. So there's all sorts of ways to do that. And your question of, is this bill trying to track that? No, it's just sort of giving us a better picture, because people are concerned. Both sides, I've tried to describe to the committee, both sides of the issue, whether you have a child's English as a second language. I've had ladies in my office saying, my child shouldn't have been in ELL, and they were placed in EL. So, you know, that's what we need to I think this bill will help do. And I think it's like I said, it's going to grow. We're going to be taking more money out of the state school fund for EL training. So let's be sure we're spending it right and getting the results we want.
Thank you. Paula?
I'm just trying to be clear, and I'm not challenging at all what you're trying to do. But this bill, if I'm clear, is to look at where the money is going, how it's being spent. That should set us up perhaps for later on to look at, is it an effective program or not? So I think those are two different questions.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think it will. If you look at the Title III report from Ben Lapide, they list in there what they're spending the money on. You know, is it Parents' Night, or it's, you know, textbooks or whatever. And they have codes, because this is one of the things that ODE was concerned about, is how do we code it so the schools, you know how to code the expense. So, Representative Reardon, I don't know that this report will. I think it will help us know where the money is being spent, and hopefully, you know, create more programs. But I'm not sure it'll address, you know, your concerns or of analyzing which ones work. That's going to have to be by the teachers, exactly. and ODE are going to have to determine that.
That was what I wanted. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yep. That's the part I was concerned about.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions, Representative Bredo, then Representative Blusa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wisnett, I think you said up there that we spend almost as much as any other state, I think, in this category. Are the other states having, I mean, as far as their success, you know, this is kind of what we want to do is evaluate and measure success out there and maybe in different methods of training. So are other states having a better success rate than we are? And are they all in the same boat, you know, at the same a poverty increasing and influx of non-English-speaking families?
Madam Chair and Representative, I need another year to answer that question. more research. But no, that's a good question, and that's what we want to do. But I think there's I think our teachers and our ELL teachers are dedicated and trying to find the best way to deliver, you know, the mission that we want or the accomplishment that we want. And it's out there, and that's what we should be doing more of is checking to see what does work, best practices. I'm a big supporter of best practices. And again, as Representative Reardon said, you know, we need more input from the teachers. But you know what? This is interesting. When I went to the teachers and people in charge, I talked to the lady in charge of the Ben Lapine ELL program, and she wasn't given amount of money to go spend and do what you can with. They asked her, how much money do you want? Now, actually, Ben Lapine is spending about 100% of the money if you look at the formula and track the money. But and the same thing with Kaiser. I talked to the person in charge of the Salem Kaiser School District at ELL, and the same thing. She had to input what she wanted to do. She didn't say. She didn't know that she got that much money from ODE. So maybe the superintendent did. ODE knows. And I have the data. I did not put that on ORS because it's several pages, but I can show you, and ODE can provide you the data of how each school district, I can look it up, your school district, of how much you were given, how much you spent, and what percentage of that was. And overall, we're not spending at all. Mm-hmm. And then you got some schools that has one EL student. So if you're going to help that student, how are you going to hire a teacher or a half-time teacher or whatever to teach EL? So some schools have 200% expenditure of what they were allocated. Mm-hmm. So there's things like that, but the person can analyze that. I can analyze or say, hey, you know, what's the deal here? And because we found working with ODE sent for the first report they sent out had both Medford and Redmond, my school, of their allocation that they should have had, they were spending less than 1%. And they were talking millions. And Medford was over $2 million. And so the ODE called up and says, what are you doing here? And they said, we've reported it wrong or we didn't do it. So now both of them are 100%. But then that's the point, though, is that if all you're doing is reporting what you're given and what you spent, well, tell me how you spent that. You know, that's a lot of money. Medford, $2 million. So how did you spend it? You know, So we'll need the legislative body, and the ODE can look at that. And they, I don't know, Madam Chair, what your plans or what you've been told. I think these are simple bills that we can work out and start on the path to being accountable and efficient with our ELL system. But I did check, and ODE has 15 FTEs dedicated to the Title III program. Mm-hmm.
I do have a question. So is this something, you can't answer for ODE, but that possibly they could have help? And I think the reason is that lots of bills, great ideas, great whatever, but it's almost like unfunded mandates to the school districts, and they have unfunded mandates coming out of the windows. And so, I can ask ODE later whether it be something that they might be able to have assistance on, or whether it's a computer thing. I mean, I don't know, but...
Madam Chair, thank you. And we all worry about that in this building. We don't want to give up. But we're talking about $600 million here. Mm-hmm. A priority in our system. If these kids don't learn English, they're going to drop out, da-da-da, while the costs multiply. ODE can speak for themselves. I do have a letter from them that they we've been communicating. They've been giving me inputs on my drafts and things like that. And I think that they can, the one letter I have from them indicated they needed $50,000 to do each report. Mm-hmm. They'll have to confirm that. I do. So that's not a $50,000, I think, is under your requirement to refer it, isn't it, Madam Chair?
Thank you. Representative Springer with an E.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
$50,000 to do each report? Each school district's report? What report?
For the whole. I interpret the letter to say, Madam Chair and Vice Chair, yes, I thought it $50,000 for the ELL and $50,000. Because what they'll do is, I'm assuming, they'll get together with the school district's representatives or whatever and come up with codes and specific how you want to do it. But again, members of this committee, look at the ELL report. It can be done. But now, of course, they said they had 18 FTEs to do that. So,
follow up. So $50,000 for the poverty report and $50,000 for the ELL report.
Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, yes.
Thank you. We see some nods back there.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Peluso.
Representative Wisnett, just to follow up a little bit on the previous questions, I just want to be certain that we're not duplicating something that may already exist, and especially if, again, if ODE is saying they have that many staff for that. So anyway, if you can help clarify that for me.
Madam Chair and Representative, LFO provided me that for the time. That's how many are designated. I didn't want to get into this, but because I hope the bill will go. But LFO said there's 15, 15 or 18 positions
18.
That are designated for the.
Between 15 and 18.
Yes, there you go.
Thank you. That way I won't be telling. That are dedicated to Title 1 and 3 reporting, I think. But that's for different money, and what the federal government, if you look at that manual in there, that's, you know, it's different money, and they want different. They're asking. I don't think our bill is going to come up with the things that they have to report on in that manual. I don't know if the chair ever had to be involved in that, but they're asking a lot of questions that little bit of money compared to what we're giving for the
follow up.
I don't think it's not a duplicate. It would not be the same report.
Okay, and that really is. I kind of distracted by that number, but that was my bigger concern. I think our staffs are at the district levels are all working hard, and I just don't want anything to be duplicated.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think the coding and what they're reporting, those could be examples of what we want to do.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm not asking to report pencils and paper and things like that, but that detail, and I don't think.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rudin.
I think this could be done simply, and it makes me a little nervous to think of legislators trying to figure out the design of this information collection. But if I were to chime in, there's a standard book used, a budgeting book, and it seemed like, you know, somebody smart could just add a couple of codes that says this is ELL money or this is ELL teachers or ELL aides, we could automatically collect that money. So there might be something that's really simple if we just ask the right smart people.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I hope you'll ask ODE that or suggest that to them and the school boards.
Not till 3.
I agree. Yeah. I think it can be done.
Of course.
Okay. Any other questions or follow-up? You look like you have a question.
That was a comment.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much.
And I did do the
presentation. Pardon?
I did do the PowerPoint.
Yes, I'm impressed. I think we're all impressed of your technical skills.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one other person signed up, Iris Maria Chavez.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Representative Doherty, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Iris Maria Chavez. I am the Government Affairs Director with Stand for Children. Today, I'm also here as a steering committee member for the Oregon Alliance for Education Equity. It's a coalition of organizations from across the state, community-based organizations, and state advocacy groups representing students of color and low-income families and low-income students of color. A lot of our work has been around how to better support English language learner students across the state. And I wanted to come today to thank Representative Wisnett for his attention and focus on a piece of this issue, speak with you guys a little bit about why our coalition and Stand for Children as well finds this piece of supporting English language learner services and programs to be of importance. I think that Representative Wisnett has done a good job outlining what some of the challenges are currently. I would like to add that in conversations that we've had as an alliance and a stand with business managers and districts, They are, too, looking for some guidance around reporting their expenditures and spending around these programs and services. A good example that we hear often are things like translation services. Do those belong in the ELL line item, or do they belong in a different place like parent engagement? And so not just a more robust accounting system is necessary, but some guidance to districts on what falls where is some feedback we've heard, and we'd like to be able to make that possible for them. We feel strongly that having accurate, robust information will help us better as advocates, family members, and you all as policymakers make smart decisions about where resources go, how to better support highly successful programs, and how to help bring some highlights to the districts that might need some more help in supporting these students. So we look forward to all of the work that you guys are going to be seeing from various members of both the House and the Senate on this matter in particular, the accounting and reporting piece, but also the many other aspects of supporting English language learners that you'll be seeing some of on Monday and some during other other bills that Representative Comp has, Senator Haas, and others.
Okay. Great. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Ms. Chavez was the only one that was signed up. Do we have other people that would like to speak on these two bills? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2967 and 2968, and I open up a public hearing on House Bill 3425.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3425 requires school districts and the Department of Education to provide information related to confirmed acts of harassment, intimidation, or bullying, or acts of cyberbullying. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay, thank you.
ODE?
I had Jan down here, but I just going to say ODE, whoever's going to come up and speak. Okay. And you're Emily?
I am.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the community, Good
we are a community.
My name is Emily Nazarov, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Department of Education. We were asked to provide some information to you about our current data collection, the work we do to support parents and districts around bullying, and then some information about the House bill. So our data collection, ODE collects data required by the Federal Safe and Healthy Schools Program. On the screen, you can see the numbers for, thank you, the 2011-12 school year and the 2013-14 school year. Bullying is not called out as a separate category, but it falls under the harassment categories that you see. There's two harassment categories. Mm-hmm. The Safe Schools Discipline, it's an annual collection. Districts are reporting all discipline incidents resulting in either an in-school suspension, an out-of-school suspension, or expulsion. And we do collect demographic information, but ODE reports in aggregate because our student data, our student privacy policy would require us to suppress so many cells, and so you wouldn't get very much information about the individual schools. Okay. So the support that we provide to districts and parents, there's a statute, 339-356, that requires districts to adopt an anti-bullying policy. And then there's an administrative rule, 581-022-1140. And through that rule, ODE implemented that statute and made it a part of the Division 22 standards. So there's three ways we support districts and work on this area. The first is we have an education specialist with responsibility for the Safe Schools program, and John English, he is out of town this week, so he's not able to be here. He provides technical assistance to districts and parents, and largely this looks like advising districts about what should be included in their anti-bullying policy, advising parents who call with a bullying complaint that they should look to their district's policy and file a complaint with their local district if the district doesn't have a policy. If the district does not have a policy, they have the right to file a local complaint about that and then appeal that to ODE.
Second, we monitor compliance with Division 22 standards through our Division 22 assurances. Every year, districts are required to report to their community and to ODE whether they're in compliance with all the requirements of Division 22. And this year, we ask specifically whether districts have adopted the bullying policy as required by the statute and rule. We have received the responses from the districts. We're in the process of going through all that data and clearing it up. So I don't have results to report to you today, but I will soon. And then finally, if a district fails to adopt a bullying policy, a parent or community member or student can file a local complaint. They work through the district process, and then they have the option of filing an appeal with ODE. And then on the House Bill 3425, we had 2 points we wanted to mention. The first is that the bill requires a new data collection, and given the time that it would require to create that collection on our end, we would recommend that the first year would be 2016-17 school year. So that gives us time to create the collection and then have it in place for the school districts to report. And the second point is something I mentioned earlier. As you can see, we report in the aggregate. And this bill requires ODE to report out demographic information. And so there would be the concern that we would have to suppress many of the schools because the number of incidents are so low.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Emily was the only one signed up, and actually I'm going to say a few things about the bill, but I think what we're going to do is gavel out and then go to a work session so we can vote and then gavel back in.
Thank you. I appreciate
so that. I am temporarily going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3425 and open up a work session on House Bill 2713.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2713 directs the Department of Education to conduct an evaluation, but the committee has actually been asked to consider the Dash 3 amendments, which replace the measure and mandate the Secretary of State conduct an audit related to the use of statewide standardized tests. It has a minimal fiscal impact, and there's no revenue impact.
And we talked about the Secretary of State doing an audit versus the DOE last time.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Daugherty, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2713, dated March 17, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2713, dated March 17, 2015. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Daugherty, I move House Bill 2713 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2713 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Could the clerk please read the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Hess.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Puzo.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Gordy?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. We need to sign a carrier. Since it's Representative Frederick's bill, we will sign it to him. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2713 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3425. And I'm just going to speak up from the dais on this one, if I can. This was a bill. It's actually a bill that I introduced. And part of it came from kids, part of it came from parents, and part of it came from concerned folks, and part of it the school district dealing with the bullying and what kinds of bullying was going on. And so that was the purpose for bringing this forward. And I think in this day and age when so many kids, especially with cyberbullying, and some of the results are tragic, absolutely tragic. And lately we've had a couple of instances that have been, as a parent, I could not even begin to think what these folks are going through. So that's part of the purpose of the bill. You know, I'm not one of these that likes these unfunded mandates, but the reporting is already done, and so what we're looking for is maybe just one other column to go through with the cyberbullying and the bullying to see what some of the specifics are, so hopefully we can deal with this, whether it's down the road that we need more mental health issues, whether we need more people out there, more counseling, whatever, for the kids. And so that's was one of the reasons that we brought it out.
But I think it's a great concept. I would worry a little bit about implementation. So I'm just curious. You may not have the answers, but I know when I was teaching, we went through a lot of training, mm-hmm. and then we also had to do some reporting. And I just don't know. Is there a standard way of reporting this data already in place across the state, or does every district need to do some
that?
Of
I don't
that
know. I could ask the ODE whether there's a standard way to report this. And I hear some back there. So if you come up and answer the question, thank you again. Yeah, for the record, we can't denote nods and shakes.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yes. That's why we're up here. Chair Doherty, my name is, members of the committee, my name is Mitch Kruzga. I'm Director of Educational Programs, Secondary Transition, and Alternative Assessment with the Department of Education. And for a time being, I was responsible for this this area and the student discipline collection. And to answer your question, when we received this bill, we went up to our IT department and asked them, under the current collection that we do for mm-hmm. discipline, which Emily referred to in her presentation, would it be just a matter of adding additional columns to the current collection? And the response we received was no. This would require the creation of an entirely new collection that IT would have to develop. And again, it's as Emily indicated, it's because the current collection that we use does not disaggregate the information down to a student level. What's being requested in this bill would disaggregate that information down to a student level, not only for the victim but also for the perpetrator as well. Mm-hmm. So IT looking at the purpose of the current discipline collection and also the information that would be required to meet the statute requirements of the bill would require the creation of an entirely new collection.
Okay. Not being an IT person, I'm worse than Senator Representative Wisnett. But is it because of in the bill? I mean, if this is something that if there were some revisions that kind of got to the idea of, you know, maybe breaking down a little more of what the cyberbullying is, would it be something that would not be a total revamping of the IT system?
Chair Doherty, that's a very good question. I'm really not prepared to answer that question mm-hmm. right now, although it would be certainly something we could go back to and find out. And from my discussions with the IT folks, what I understood was the specificity of information you wanted around individual students mm-hmm. that the bill wants around individual students, that
yeah.
is really the catch right there. Because, again, the current discipline collection doesn't disaggregate that information down to that level. And so because the bill not only mentions the districts have to report it, but then ODE also has to report that data and provide that information back to the school districts, I believe. And I believe that may mm-hmm. be where the catch is.
Okay.
I certainly would be happy to work with Emily to go back to our IT folks and to provide you with some answers to those questions. And what if I understand what you're getting at, it would be, would there be a way to get to the same information you want from the bill and at the same time not have to create an entirely new, got it.
Exactly.
And I think we can easily get those answers for you and back to the committee.
That's what we're looking at. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. You know, I work with demographic information all the time in my private business, but for the purpose of this bill, how do we describe demographic information for both the perpetrator and the victim here?
Specifically, if I remember correctly, and I'm sorry, I don't, like I said, I didn't come prepared to talk. I don't have the bill in front of me. I believe it asks for very specific individual information about the students, including whether or not the victim is from a protected class. Mm-hmm. And that gets down to some very, what we refer to in ODE, Representative Wilson, is student identifiable information, to where somebody could look at that for a school district and be able to identify who the individual student actually is. And that's the information when we're talking about getting desegregating information down to the point where you can identify an individual student. By ODE standards, we have a system in place where that information will be won't show. It'll show up as a hyphen, or it'll show up as a zero. If it's individually identifiable information. And some of this information that's requested for in the bill, it gets to that level. And I believe that's where IT wanted to create a collection that made sure that there was a way to provide that information, but at the same time, when that information is disseminated, to protect the identity of the individual students.
Exactly.
Did that answer your question, Representative?
Yeah, I think that gets to where I'm going. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that I would be concerned about is the data itself and the broad range of what districts consider harassment, intimidation, bullying, or cyberbullying, because if you look at it looks like it's what's based upon the criteria of the handbook. I know districts create their own handbooks, and so policy is driven by what the district deems to be acts of harassment, intimidation, and so forth. So the data could very easily be very different from district to district. So I guess I would just my question would be, are we concerned about the differences from district to district and what it is that you're collecting? And if we are wanting to really look at what's happening out there, would it be in our best interest to say we're going to define what this is across our state instead of having it? Because there's a, definitely a very broad description of what of what these things are, and it's up to the districts. We've left that up to them to decide, and so I'm just trying to kind of
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, there is a provision in the bill that says that says the State Board of Education shall prescribe by rule the form and information required to be provided under this subsection, so that may be a way that we could find some common definitions for districts to report on.
And Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, also understand with these collections, the guidance that's provided to the district is very specific about around what the definitions are. For example, in the discipline collection, it's very specific when they're going in and coding students for a specific section in the discipline collection. It's very clear what it's referring to. So if this collection were to be created, it would be very specific around what are the identifications of a student who's been bullied or a victim. And there is quite a bit of current law in place, legislation in place that identifies specifically what bullying is, and so I think it would probably a lot of it would be based on that. So,
just one follow-up.
Yeah.
Will this be all ages across the board? So we're going to look at
That is correct. The way the bill is written, it would be for students K-12.
We're going to have to let parents know definitely what we're.
Oh, yes. Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, but first just a couple things to piggyback here. I think it was 09, maybe it was 11, this body passed out a bill on bullying. We've passed out bull, too. But anyway, defining and some would say shoring up the bullying laws. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it was 9 or 11. I'm not seeing an appropriate head nod or shake back there, so they don't know either. But one of the things that it did in ORS 339-351 is specifically define what harassment, intimidation, bullying, and cyberbullying, which is what district policies are written on.
Yeah.
And then I remember this piece, it also added the protected class and listed specifically, and we can go through a whole bunch of what those are here, what those protected classes are. So I think that part has been shored up before, whether we agree or disagree, that part is pretty defined. What I'm stuck on here is when it looks at the report, a report must include demographic information of the person who committed the act, demographic information of the person who was the subject of the act, and whether the act was based on a protected class. And then the department shall publish information received. And it was alluded to, I think, a little bit earlier, but my concern is still very real and up front, and that is, how much information is going to be available there? You know, if you put some demographic information in Portland and you describe an incident, who knows who it is? Mm-hmm. You do that in Mill City, I'm going to figure it out.
So I'm concerned how that, how that information is going to be constructed, and then the value of that on a website. How to use that.
Vice Chair Springer, you're absolutely correct. And that's why ODE currently has in place rules around the dissemination and release of information and how far we can go in releasing information that will be that could potentially lead to the identification of an individual student. So you're correct. In this case, it would be information that would be valuable at an aggregate level, state or district level. But in some districts, it would be very difficult, because if you only have three or four incidences in a district where there may only be 70 students, the demographic information could include what grade the student was in, and just that information alone based on, given also the student's gender could identify an individual student. So when ODE reported that information, a great deal of the information for some of these smaller districts may just be lined out. That doesn't mean that ODE wouldn't have the information, but for reporting the information to the public for the use, for whatever use it may be, it would definitely impact the value of the data and the data that would be reported.
Let's follow up on that. Thank you. Sorry to shoot a hole in your bill here, Madam Chair.
No, that's fine.
And
I'm
that's not my intent.
No, I'm writing down what the concerns are.
But it was last week while I was actually sitting in caucus and on the floor, my son was texting me about a shooting threat at his school and that he was in lockdown and this, all this kind of stuff. Somebody said, are you going? And I said, what am I going to do? And it was a result of Burn Book, the new app Burn Book, that a lot of teens are using, and adults that need to get a life, I think. But anyway, a lot of people are starting to use Burn Book. It's an anonymous way to post whatever you want to post. So day two, there was another one. That's bullying. I really feel my son was bullied that day. Him and his 1,250-ish friends were bullied. How are you going to collect that information? How are you going to use that information? What are you going to do with that information? And then here's a cranky mama bear. I don't like that information posted. I don't like news cameras showing up. And there was one student interviewed, happened to be my kid because he was late to class. I don't like that stuff talked about in a way that glamorizes it at all. And what happens day two, you get the same thing because you got such a great reaction on day one. I want to be careful how this is used. And I found out as a result of this, there's been 8 shooting scares and 4 bomb scares in his 4 years. We don't need to blow it up more, no pun intended.
I'll defer to Emily on that question.
Yeah, is it a question or a comment?
Just kidding.
That sounded like a comment.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, thank you.
So how are we going to use that information with a shooting threat? Because they were all bullied.
Representative Springer, to be honest with you, I don't know how that would be addressed specifically in this bill. Again, you referred to specific language in ORSs that refer to what bullying is, and that could be something that it could very well be that that's outside the scope of what would be referred to in the law as bullying. And so it would certainly be something that would have to be considered when trying to figure out how to code the language or collect the data for a collection, whether it be this collection, if we had to create it, or whether it be another collection, whether it be the discipline collection or another collection.
And to your point, Representative Springer, every collection has rules, right? And so, for example, in the Safe and Healthy Schools collection, a student can be reported multiple times in a single year if the student a single incident can account for multiple students. So as we design the collection, we would think about all the possible instances that could come up and think about how those instances would be reported and create rules for the collection.
Yeah. Very good point. Yeah, and Representative Springer, that is true. So you could have one incident where a student's actions impacted several students, or several students were involved. And so you would, in the discipline collection, you would have multiple points of data. And so you're right. I mean, potentially something like this could result in 1,200 points of data as a result of the one incident.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. How about Representative McLean, then Representative Reardon?
Well, I'm just still learning on this subject area. The bullying issue and trying to make it transparent and trying to make it helpful to folks, making sure that we're trying to improve the situation in our schools, I think is absolutely important. It's still out there. It's not been solved, even though we may have tightened up, you know, some of our ordinances as far as what it is and those types of things. But it seems to me like the problem we're having with this particular one is the size of the class. So, you know, you're talking about the size of schools, you're talking about demographics in schools as far as, you know, making it more apparent who the specific child is and all of those things. And so it seems like those are things we can deal with. I mean, we've had reporting on issues. We know who has free lunch, we know, but we've learned how to adapt so that we have a size of class that's not going to cause identification problems. So to me, that doesn't seem like a barrier. It just seems like we need to think about it some more. Mm-hmm. The goal itself, I mean, is imperative that we do better and we do more. And I don't know, because I haven't talked to the representative that's sponsoring this, but, and that's you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That I don't understand. I mean, I want to understand what the parents or what the students or what the schools or what the communities were thinking about what it would do to have something more than just a state reporting. You know, an individual reporting, a district reporting, even, you know, in a district, you've got more than one school. And we don't necessarily have to have the age of the child in my mind, mm-hmm. you know, if that'll help with the size of the class. But anyway, I'm trying to figure out how do we do this in a way that gets to the actual goal of the sponsor, because the goal is imperatively important to improving situations for safety with kids in schools. So I think there's a lot of bright minds in here, and it just seems like we just need to rethink the size of the class, and we can get there.
Okay, it is. Representative Springer, she's reading the law books here.
So former cop knows always goes to an ORS. So as I look at this, and a lot of this is based on what we passed the year that I couldn't indicate, and it talks about what the district policy needs, what it's required to have, and it's a bunch of stuff. But what I don't see that it requires is reporting out to the parents, to the district's community. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that is maybe where this bill is attempting to get to, that all the parents in my kid's district know generally about the bullying incidents, the harassment mm-hmm. incidents the prior year. Mm-hmm. Or maybe on the website. I've never went and looked for that information on my district, so I don't know if it's readily available or it's hidden. But this does not, nothing in the statute here that I have found going through it talks about the district has to report that out to its community.
Okay.
Vice Chair Springer, was that
wrong?
A question, or I honestly
I'm not doing a very good job tacking on question marks at the end of my statements, am I?
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, I would agree with that. And when we ask districts to report to us their Division 22 assurances, the only thing we're asking them is, do you have a policy as required by this?
Right.
We don't ask how many incidents of bullying or anything like that as part of that.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Just a question, and the question that we probably should always ask ourselves before we do anything in this legislature is, what perceived problem is this taking care of? And so I guess I just might ask you two, how would you answer that question?
Well, maybe I can answer the question since it was my bill. Mm. What it is there is a huge, well, huge, even one is enough. There is an increase in teen suicide.
Yeah.
And I think part of it has been attributed to cyberbullying, to, you know, whether you want to call it the mean girls, whatever it is. And that was my major, you know, push at something like this, is that teen suicide is a critical, it's becoming to be a critical point. That, and I think also with sexual orientation, more and more kids coming out, and that's also something that is getting an increase in in bullying, and a lot of that ends up in teen suicide. So that was my major push on something like this. I mean, everything, whether it's this is a start, do we need to have more trained personnel? I mean, even counselors, we're going to be hearing about this later on in a session, even counselors in the high school are saying, we now need therapists for some of the kids that we have coming in. That some of the issues are that severe. So in answer to your question, that was at least my impetus for this.
Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you.
So, Representative Barreto?
You, Chair Doherty. Yeah, on that last comment then. You know, because when we look at these numbers here that they had on the chart, numbers going down from 11 to 12 to 13 and 14, and with technology going up and the trend increase in suicide, you know, how does that jibe with the numbers?
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto, the one thing I would point out is that this collection is looking at all discipline incidents resulting in either an in-school suspension, out-of-school suspension, or expulsion. So there may be incidents of bullying that are happening in schools that are not resulting in one of those discipline events.
Okay. I would like to compliment with the downward trend.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Something's working. Representative McLean.
Well, and part of it is something that I've heard, I think it maybe was in my consumer protection, with the, you know, with the kinds of things that we're talking about online, there are probably 10 to 12 incidences sometimes a week that teachers start reporting to, you know, to counselors. We haven't been asked to report this to administration for any kind of expulsion necessarily. We've been asked to try and do the helping. You've noticed a kid who says, I've had an experience. You don't know who the perpetrator was. So they're not going to end up in an expulsion or in one of those categories that you're talking about. We've just got a hurting kid. And so we're trying to get them to a counselor, or we're trying to get them to someone that can help them with an incident that's happened online outside of school, the school day, and or connected to something in the school day. And they're even, I mean, the school districts are also working on that. How much control do they have over what happens outside of the classroom or outside of the school day if it's something that was initiated during the school day? And so, I mean, there are a lot of kids out there that are in these categories of bullying that don't hit those categories right there. So my hope was that if you look at the definition, you look at reporting, you know, things that can be called cyberbullying, that we'll start getting some of that data versus where the teachers are sending them right now, which is to the counselor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions, comments? Representative Peluso.
I'm just curious, and maybe I missed something in the conversations, and I apologize if I have. So what... It talks about gathering all this data, this information, but it doesn't talk about what action will be taken as a result of that information. Yeah. I mean, are we just tracking, and yeah, we can say excellent that trends are down, but are we able to get anything from that that will help us deal with issues related to bullying or work to solve those, why that's all happening? I'm very vague, and I understand that, but it's...
Representative Peluso, are you asking about what happens with the safe and current data that we're collecting now?
And future data. I mean, what the bill talks about is collecting. It doesn't talk about any action related to the information that's gathered.
Do you know what we do? As I sit here, I wouldn't be able to explain how we use this data in practice at ODE, but I could get some information about that and share it back with you.
Yeah, well, I just think that's...
Well, and I may be able to answer the question. I think what it is, it's the idea of you've got the data, and each school district deals, and these are all either in-school suspensions or expulsions, and so each school district deals with that in a different manner. I know that there are a few bills coming out this session that deal with, you know, why do we have an 8-year-old being suspended? And this, you know, and for whatever. And so how do we deal with it on the district level with maybe an in-school suspension and so on? So I think maybe the answer to your question is, depending on the resources of the district, it's all across the board. But I think what we're doing in this session is looking at it a little more carefully and saying, you know, when these sort of things happen, especially with expulsions and suspensions, how do we deal with it in an age-appropriate manner? And I think that's what they're doing. I think right now there's some districts that don't have the resources to really go through, and you've got a child that really, really needs help. Yeah, so.
Well, as a follow-up, then I think, and it doesn't necessarily have to be part of bill language, but what that brings to my mind is that we need to be looking at those triggers that are causing these things and work towards a solution. And I would love to have this information be helpful in identifying the solutions. And I will say, and I know Rep. Springer was in law enforcement as well, I would really love to know when law enforcement is brought into the picture. Mm-hmm. I don't need to know the data. I have always been concerned over the course of my many years that school districts don't really like to have the police responding to their buildings. And oftentimes, and again, this is just kind of a broad statement, but I think we need to start looking at that data, because those are the ones that become the shooters, and those are the ones that become the bombers, and that's a real concern. So and if we're going to gather data, let's get the hard-hitting stuff in there as well.
And just a little bit, and then we'll go to Representative Hack, is that there are some school districts that do. I mean, I'm blessed to live in a school district that has student resource officers in every high school. In the middle schools, they're there about half, three-quarters of the time to deal with a lot of issues and so on and so forth. And it's not only the to be able to deal with issues and help parents and help teachers, but it's also and Portland has them too, where they go through and the kids have a different view of what police officers are.
Understood.
So, anyway. Okay, but I've got it down. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are threat assessments that are done once.
Right.
Most districts do the threat assessment once they've determined that there is a level to the degree that they need to bring law enforcement in or the counties in to do an assessment psychologically and so forth. But, again, I'm going to bring it back to the policies within the district, though, because when it comes to the cyberbullying and the tweeting and that kind of stuff, districts, I can tell you, are not versed in what to look for. They don't know. They aren't educated on what to look for. So while we can talk about reporting data all day long, until we teach them what to look for, I can tell you we had an incident with my daughter. And we had about 800 pages of tweets. And it talked about the most explicit, disgusting things. I wouldn't even want to say them on record. And the police department didn't know how to read through them. The school district didn't know how to read through them. They were threatening both sexually and physically. And until we educate our school district folks that are in charge of that as to what they're looking for, this information that we're asking them to report, they don't even know how to report it because they don't even understand what they're looking at. They didn't know how to read the tweets. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to decipher it. My daughter had to sit down and live through it and teach them how to understand what they were looking at before a threat assessment could be done. And it was dealing with raping, killing, everything. And it was several girls. It was absolutely disgusting. So I'm telling you, while we're talking about gathering this data, if it doesn't start at teaching them what to look for, this is a new, absolutely new world of technology to look at. And I love that we're talking about collecting data, but I think you've got to go back to the policy inside our schools, what it is that they have to look for, and how we teach them to do that. Because we can talk about collecting data all day long, but if they don't know what they're collecting,
they don't know what to do with it. Excellent point.
It's no good to us.
Okay.
So.
Any other conversation? Representative Reardon.
I think it has it's evolved into more conversation than
and that's not
than,
your fault.
Than questions.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic issue. It's just amazing how many things have been brought out in just this discussion. Mm-hmm. And just a couple of things, I think maybe it's all been said, but very concerned about the issue of the privacy of individual student data. I know we've talked about that a lot in this committee, and so I don't want to be throwing additional information out there, so I know you can be careful about that. Not sure why we would publish information on a website, so what would be done with that information? Is it going to be damaging to a district or helpful? I just haven't digested that yet. concerned about how you do it, just the whole implementation of how do you collect that data. We talked a little bit about what data do we really want. I think there's a lot of questions around that that have come up today. So having been in marketing where I had to collect communications or customer information, it's really easy to just get bad information, and that's not very helpful. So that design aspect, it really has to, it takes some time. It's hard to do. And then maybe we could agree on, you know, what the state would do with the information, but I think based on what I'm hearing is I'm really concerned about are we, you know, are there good tools at the district level? Because we want to help them be able to respond quickly. I mean, it's nice to have a report that comes out a year or 2 years after incidents and see some trends and stuff. It's kind of entertaining. But it's kind of like that when we're talking about, you know, the teacher tools, you know, the testing that can be done. How do we get data that the people at the classroom or in the district level, how can they, what do they need to be effective to help deal with these issues? Is there anything we can do there that maybe could be done more and better? So. Other than that,
it's been
good
conversation. Good conversation. Anything else? I appreciate. Are you guys kind of putting you on the spot here? But the information was very good and very valuable. We
glad
appreciate
we were here.
It very
Thanks.
Much. Okay, with that, we close the work set, a public hearing on House Bill 3425. And seeing nothing else, I adjourned the House until Monday, the 30th. Until Monday, the 30th. I adjourned the House until